Welcome to the Explore Words, Discover Worlds podcast, presented by Bradford Literature Festival. In this episode, we are joined by Bradford author Charlotte Bradman, as she shares her remarkable story of breaking free from a turbulent past, mounting debts, and the monotony of a 9-to-5 grind to embrace a simpler way of life in her beloved caravan. The Happy Nomad is Bradman's debut, a journey of self-discovery. Recorded live at the 2024 Bradford Literature Festival, celebrate Bradman's journey from loss to liberation and discover the transformative power of embracing life's simple pleasures.
Weather's miserable, but we are gonna have a fantastic hour. I know. Has everybody been outside and had a look at the van? No. Okay. So if you haven't, you have got that delight to come afterwards. It is really, really fantastic. So you're going to be signing books, Charlotte, afterwards, aren't you?
I am. I certainly am. So anyone that would like to buy a book and have it signed, or just come and have a nosy at the van. I've tidied it up, I've vacuumed, it's looking good. So, yeah, after the talk, I'll be outside and you can come out, have a look and get a book signed and have a nosy around the van. It's a lovely little home on wheels.
Wow, how fantastic is that? It's like a Saltaire, you know, in the Saltaire Arts Trail when people open their houses, which is one of the best things in the world. This is brilliant. We are all going to have to get a nosy and have a poke around your home.
Oh, yes,
but
definitely.
But before we do that, let me kind of properly introduce myself. I'm the host for this evening. I'm Peg Alexander, local journalist, presenter, event host. I do loads of this sort of stuff, sometimes on radio, sometimes on telly, sometimes on podcasts and various other places. I'm very pleased tonight to be in conversation with, I'm going to call you local lass, Charlotte.
I am a local lass. Keithley lass, for anyone out there from Keithley.
Come on,
raise your hands.
Keithley massive. Woo! Go on. Cheer up for Keithley. I don't know how much I need to introduce you, Charlotte, because I think there's quite a lot of people here that you actually know as well.
Some familiar faces.
Yeah, which is always lovely. But let me do the kind of formal introduction, because here we're going to talk about your very brave decisions to live life a different way. You've got your new book, The Happy Nomad, How I Lost My House and Found Freedom in a Campervan. You're going to talk to us about tonight your turbulent past, because the book is very much about that.
Yes.
About what you've lived through, about debts, about the monotony of a 9-to-5 grind.
So I will put it out there. I know it's called The Happy Nomad, which I feel is just mis-selling it slightly. But obviously, every human life, it's always up and down, and we have sad moments, we have adversity, but you know, we always have points, sometimes long periods of time, where we are happy. And obviously at the moment where I am in my life, I'm extremely happy and even happier because you've all come to see me tonight.
Oh,
so thank you so much.
Fantastic. So over the next hour, we're going to join your journey, Charlotte, from loss to liberation, discovering the transformative power of embracing life's simple pleasures. I wish I could say to you that I'd done something as brave as you have, as kind of giving away all your stuff and giving it all up and going and living in a camper van. I have kind of nearly done something a little bit similar, but not at all as brave as you. So I'm sure that will come out over the next hour. But I wanted to start with the fact that this all started for you, didn't it, with an article you wrote in The Guardian.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, I was living in Cornwall in my van because I was, finding life quite difficult, and I just needed to, get out of it all, take a step back and take some time out. So I took the camper van down to live in Cornwall. And in Cornwall, there is quite a lot of stigma about people that live in vans, which I, from my point of view, I found it really unfair, There's lots of second and third homeowners in Cornwall, but yet a lot of the employment down there is in minimum wage jobs, in hospitality, in retail. Yet there's nowhere for the people they want to do those jobs. There's nowhere for them to live. So I kind of wanted to respond to that negativity around people living in vans, and just show the people of Cornwall that, you know, we're all human beings the same as anybody else. So I did. I wrote this open letter to the Newquay Voice, it was, newspaper down there. And surprisingly, they loved it and they published it. And then from there, I was lucky enough to have a friend who had some contacts at The Guardian. So she encouraged me to send it there. And even though I was absolutely terrified of rejection, you know, they're not going to like this article. They won't think I'm a real writer. And they loved it. And they published it. And then on the same day that the article was published, I had several literary agents contacting me on my social media. And I signed with one on the same day.
Wow,
how this came about.
Wow, it's like the stuff of dreams, that isn't it? It literally went viral. But, you know, I guess as well, very much kind of tying into a mood in the nation around second homes, around where people were going, you know, COVID and what that had meant for us. And, of course, the thing about this is your story that you were telling wasn't just the story of I live in a van. It was also a very personal story, which we'll come to in a minute. You've mentioned you live in Cornwall and you moved down to Cornwall. And obviously, I think all of us can understand that the weather's a bit better down in Cornwall.
Well, it is actually.
It is, you know, it's a bit easier living in a van in Cornwall than it is in Yorkshire. Let's go back to Keighley and where it all starts in Keighley, because I actually think this is a dead Yorkshire story.
Of course it's a Yorkshire story, because I'm a dead Yorkshire lass. So it couldn't be anything other than,
So you're living in Keighley, you're working in the NHS.
Yes.
You've got a job. You've got a house that you bought with your ex-partner, and it's all going a bit tits up, to be honest, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just so hard at the moment, and it has been for a long time, to, you know, keep everything financially on track. Even when you've got two wages coming into a household, if you're renting, you have a mortgage, and the utility bills, everything just keeps going up. You know, even supermarket items, you know, foodstuffs, it's all just going up and up and up. And we were struggling just the two of us with two full-time, you know, reasonably good wages. And you know, at that time we were, you know, under that pressure to make ends meet. We were also struggling, our relationship was struggling, and with one thing and another, I lost my home. The house was repossessed, and there was absolutely no way that I could afford to live on my wage alone. I couldn't rent a property. The list for council housing was just ridiculously long. So for me, I made the decision, which I felt, you know, I didn't really have any other choice, was initially I then moved into a caravan.
You had been living for a while, though, in a caravan in your back garden, hadn't you?
Because you'd
been, it felt to me reading it was very incremental, this, because you kind of, at one point, you needed to rent out the rooms to get the rent in to help try and pay the mortgage. So you then move into a caravan that you've somehow got over the back wall into your back garden.
We winched it over the wall into the back garden. All the neighbours were out with their phones ready for the You've Been Framed clip. Because at one point, there was just the wheels of this huge caravan balanced on this really old wall. And we were all holding it there and balancing it. And we had some, you know, kind of unconventional usage of motorbike ramps to winch it down into the garden. And that was, that was my bedroom. That was kind of where I lived for, I don't know, about 3 or 4 years.
You and the dog, Peggy.
Me and my lovely dog, Peggy,
I know, the dog called, that's the second dog I know of called Peggy,
I didn't name her Peggy, but she was an Akita, bred to fight bears. I'm not really sure the name Peggy was particularly appropriate, but She was a great dog, yeah. I mean, basically, I rented all the rooms out in the house. I initially started with just one room because my partner, the relationship broke down, and I was trying to, you know, keep the house afloat, you know, make ends meet, because I wanted to stay in my home. You know, I'd been there a long time. But in order to do that, yeah, I had to, my only option was to rent the rooms out in the property, which, you know, had some quite interesting and frightening and varied encounters with the lodgers over the years. Had a male burlesque dancer, which was very interesting, I will say. He was fabulous. Yeah, just some wonderful characters. Some people who I've, you know, stayed friends with for years. But then some other, you know,
not so good
characters. Yeah.
So you'd done that time. So when it came and the house was repossessed, it probably didn't feel as big a move to move permanently into a caravan for yourself. But you hot-footed up to the Lake District, didn't you? Moved
yes.
into a caravan.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, my house, even though I had lodgers in it, it was still full of my things. And I had the little caravan in the back garden that I would sleep in. So I still had all of these things, all of these mementos and objects and art. And I had a bit of an obsession with 1970s three-piece suites, you know. But, you've got an obsession with something. So I did have lots of furniture in there. So, yeah.
Yeah, and getting rid of the furniture, that's you are actually a convicted criminal, aren't you?
I am a convicted yep. criminal.
Not
I will
too
say
far from the county court up there, was it?
I was there.
Magistrates court up there, yeah.
Right over the road, that's where I received my conviction. So I'm sorry to say, guys, you are, listening to a criminal at the moment. My apologies.
Because that was related to the disposal of one of your
It was.
So one of your three-piece sweets. It's actually for fly tipping, isn't it? Even though you didn't. I'm not going to... No spoilers, but you didn't actually fly tip.
No, I am not a notorious fly tipper. Although if you type my name into Google and you keep scrolling down, you will see the article in the Keithley News, which has branded me as, yes.
Yes, although you didn't actually fly tip. You'll have to read the book to get the rest of the story.
You will.
To discover how you ended up as a criminal mastermind.
I should wear a badge, really, shouldn't I? Warning people, fly tipper.
So you're living in the Lake District. You're now living in a caravan as well. Your story wasn't just that the house was getting repossessed, that paying the bills was difficult. You'd had a pretty difficult life, hadn't you? And there's one line you put in your book, which to me made me want to cry, and actually just reading it now makes me want to cry
for
you.
Don't get
as
me
well.
Going. We'll all be off. Has anyone got any tissues?
You wrote, "I have no idea where I, Charlotte Bradman, begins and what I've had to do to learn to survive ends."
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's talk a bit about that survival.
Well, I mean, because obviously my childhood was quite difficult. It was, you know, full of fear and violence, really. And you have to learn to be a certain way to get through that, especially as a child. You learn different types of behaviour, which aren't necessarily innate to your personality. You know, you have to read the signals that, you know, could indicate violence or an outburst or, you know, things like that. So you have to be hyper aware all the time so that you can protect yourself and obviously not trigger any further violence. So when I was growing up, that's kind of how I learned to be. And I've often questioned, you know, is that me? Am I that person? Or who would I have been had I not had to learn that behavior? And, you know, it's not just me that has been through that. There are so many of us, you know, in the world that's been through, you know, trauma, either from domestic violence or, you know, from war. Obviously, at the moment, there's so much war going on and, you know, it's horrible. But you do learn coping mechanisms and traits of your personality, you know, kind of manifest because of what you've experienced as a child.
Yeah, I mean, you another thing that you said, you know, you can transform trauma or suffering into whatever we want to transform it into as well. That's right at the very end of the book you say that. And I find that a very positive message as well, because, you know, you were left with PTSD growing up, and you obviously have had a lot of help and support and everything with dealing with that. But, you know, when you... In your early teens, you know, it all kind of came out, didn't it? You know, you're a bit of a tearaway. Things did not go well. 15 years old, you find yourself in the situation you don't want to be in as a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was feeling so anxious. And at that time, I didn't even really know what anxiety was. I didn't know why I was feeling that way. And the only way for me, even, you know, 15, 16, 17 to... deal with it, because I desperately didn't want to feel so anxious, was to drink. You know, I used to drink a lot of alcohol. You know, I used to do drugs. I was doing heavy drugs, you know, from the age of 16, because I wanted to feel differently. I didn't want that anxiety and that hyper awareness and that, you know, level of dysfunction. You know, I didn't want to feel that way anymore. So yeah, I tried to change that with alcohol and drugs, and obviously all that did was make it all worse. And then
the other thing I think that impacted on the rest of the story in terms of the repossession and the debts and everything was retail therapy was another of the things that you fell into,
shopping,
wasn't
yes,
it?
Indeed.
And that all was part of building up the debts that you ended up with.
So I was on the sherry, but also using the Topshop star cards. So it was a bit of a mix. Obviously, the retail therapy is probably slightly less damaging than the drugs and booze, but only by a slim degree, because then, of course, you end up in debt. And that's, you know, that's what happened to me. So I was in debt. I wasn't very well with my mental health, and I was, struggling.
But you end up in the Lake District, and we're not going to ruin all the story because there's so much.
Oh no, we can't tell you everything. Can't tell you everything.
No, there's so much more to the stories. But you end up in the Lake District with new partner Lee, you kind of realise that. I think that reading the book, that's when you realise that stuff is not good for you, and that actually losing your stuff is really freeing for you, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Like, obviously, at the time when my house was repossessed, it was incredibly traumatic to have my home where I'd lived for 13 years, you know, kind of taken away. But the process of getting rid of all the things in the house, of emptying it, was truly transformative. You know, really looking at something and thinking, do I need this? Does it make me thrive? You know, do I have to have this in my life for me to be fulfilled? And for the majority of things, including my Nana's paperweights, I'm sorry, Nana.
Yeah, because you did collect your non-connected paperweights and you carried on the paperweight collection, didn't you?
And, and it all just, getting rid of it all, taking it to charity shops, just liberating myself from all these anchors, you know, because that's how I saw them in the end. It was an anchor, you know, it was holding me to a place. But not only was it holding me to a place, you know, say if it was a paperweight from my Nana, you know, it's got emotional attachment there. So it was an anchor to a state of emotional being. You know, I felt a particular way when I held this paperweight from my Nana. And again, it was just taking up space, not only in my surroundings, my environment, but in my head. And it wasn't like I was cutting this tie with my Nana by getting rid of these paperweights, because I wasn't, you know. I have all this love and all my memories with my Nan and all the moments we've shared. And do I need the paperweight to remember that? No, I don't need the paperweight. It's all there in my head.
Because one of the other phrases, there's so many lovely phrases. I mean, you have such a fantastic writing style, which in a way isn't surprising because you did go off and do an MA in creative writing.
Half an MA.
So, you know, but you have this lovely, lovely writing style, and there's so many gorgeous little quotes and phrases in the book. But one of the things you say, which I just adore, is you say, don't own things, own the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what I would encourage everyone to do.
There must be times, though, Charlotte, there must be times, because we've looked in your van and it is very minimalist, right? Mm-hmm. There must be times that you must just sit there and think, oh, I wish I had this, or I wish I had that, or I could really do with certain other kind of things that just make life a bit easier or a bit more comfortable. And there must be times, though, when surely you feel, you just wish you had kind of a bit of that normality, or am I way off here?
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't. There's the only thing I need right now is a diesel heater. That is what I need, and that is because the summer has not managed to get to us yet. We did have 2 days, I think, a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, so the van outside is actually relatively new. So the one thing that I haven't got in there yet is a diesel heater. And it's the one thing that even, you know, 3 hot water bottles sometimes do not cut the mustard. So at the moment, that's the only thing I need. Don't get me wrong, I'm still, you know, I mean, this jacket, it's one of my favourite jackets. And I love the colours and the, you know, and the print. And so I do still, you know, occasionally I will treat myself to clothing, because that is a big part of my identity. But in the world of the van, it's one thing in and one thing out.
Oh.
It's with clothes. So anything that I buy, it has to be 100% I will wear it.
You
forever.
Have the ultimate capsule wardrobe, don't you?
Yes.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the practicalities, because I know that's what
everyone
wants
always
to know.
Wants to know.
We
about
all
want
to know about the toilet.
What
we
about
all
the
want
shower?
To know about the shower. Yeah, so come on, let's talk about the practicalities, because it's not a motorhome that you've got out there.
No,
it's not an RV with a little shower and a toilet and all of that. You haven't got a heater, as you were telling us.
No.
Tell us about the practicalities, the realities of living in that van. Have you got electricity? Let's start there.
Oh, yeah, I've got electric. I've got solar as well. So when I drive the van, there's a little system in there that charges the battery that, you know, basically I use to charge my phone, charge the laptop. But I don't have anything in there. Like, I don't have a telly. I've got a fridge. In this van, I have got an oven and a grill, which, I decided that would be a really nice addition. But in all my other camper vans that I've lived in over the years, or the last camper van, I just had a single hob. That was for 3 or 4 years. And, do you know, the variation of meals that you can do with just one hob is pretty amazing, really.
So you don't live off pot noodle, then?
I don't live off pot noodles, Peg. No. So you just don't need that much. You don't need all the gadgets and gizmos. You just need a source of fire, like the good old, you know, like the good old days.
What do you do for water?
So I just, fill my water up at various taps.
But that can, I mean, I know, because I've read the book, that can be quite an adventure, can't it?
Oh, it's always an adventure. If I'm out and about, out on the travels, yeah, finding a water tap is sometimes a fun thing to do, because, you know, they can be anywhere and everywhere. They can be on the back of a building, in an industrial estate, on the side of a leisure centre. I've never actually snuck into anyone's garden yet, but, you know, if you see me in your gardens with some empty bottles, I'll apologise now.
You must be tempted, though, surely. If you can see someone's got a garden tap, be so tempted.
No, I'd never do that, because obviously that's someone's private space, and you wouldn't want to cause anyone any distress.
So you fill up some water bottles and keep them in the van.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Some people have portable baths in their vans, don't they?
I do.
What do you call them? Van lifers. Van lifers.
Van lifers, yeah. Oh, yeah. Some people have all singing, all dancing vans. So I met a lovely man called Warren, who is in the book. I met him in a car park in Ilfracombe, and we were complete strangers. We'd known each other for 3 days, and together we walked the entire Southwest Coast Path. And after Warren had, you know, seen how I was living in my camper van, he decided to do the same. But because Warren is an expert engineer, his van is far superior to mine. He's got a boiler system in there, a shower. He's got a proper flushing toilet, flat screen TV. It's a work of art. It's beautiful. But, you know, I always, you know, say, well, I gave you the idea in the first place. But for me, you know, having a shower in a van is great. But it, for me, I prefer to have the space rather than the shower. You can always get a shower. There are showers everywhere. You know, you can sneak onto a busy campsite if you're feeling brave. But then,
well, you probably can't anymore since writing the book.
Oh, probably won't. They'll recognise me now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or they might let me use it anyway. Yeah. You never know. But there's leisure centres. And obviously in summer when we get one, you know, you can just swim in a river, swim in the sea. You know, there's so many ways to get clean. Washing up bowl, bar of soap, back at van. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a nice simple life.
You're really into wild swimming, aren't you? That's become a really big thing for you.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, not only is wild swimming throwing yourself into cold water about getting clean if you don't have a fancy shower in your camper van, but it is all about just being in the present moment. So if you're feeling anxious or depressed, or you have, you know, thoughts that you know that are churning, or you know you just want to quiet your mind, the quickest and most wonderful way to do that is to launch yourself into cold water, because I guarantee whatever you've been worrying about, whatever you are anxious about, you know, past, present, future, it will all go away in a flash. Because you are immediately immersed into the sensations in your body, and there is no room for thought, and you are absolutely brought into that present moment in such a beautiful way, connecting with nature, connecting with the sensations in your body. It's just, for me, it's addictive. And it's not just addictive, you know, because you get the buzz, the tingle on the skin. Is addictive because it's one of the only times for me that I can really switch my mind off, you know, because we're always going out where we're worrying, we've got thoughts, you know, about the future and, you know, ruminating on what happened in the past. And sometimes it is the surefire way if you're feeling brave enough to just switch that off just for a moment or two. And feel that silky cool river water or the salty grit of the sea, just to feel that on your skin. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you brought that up, and I was going to ask you about that whole thing about living in the moment and how easy that is, because I know, you know, you've done a lot of work on yourself, you've done a lot of therapy, coping with things that had happened in your past. Given that you live this van life, you are a van lifer, you're not tied down to a full-time job, you're not even tied down to living in one particular place. No. How much then does that enable you to really live in the moment rather than, you know, I mean, I think I live in the future and a lot of people I know live in the past. Are you able to actually get to that point of properly living in the moment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, living in a camper van, you have to think present moment all the time. You know, you've got to think, right, you know, I'm going to sleep here in this lay-by tonight.
Got to go to the toilet now.
Got to nip to Asda facilities, you know. So you're kind of forced into the present moment because you're living in the here and now, because you can move your home to wherever you want it to be, whatever view you would like out of your window. I mean, the wonderful thing about living in a home that you can move is that your opportunities just open up, you know, whatever it may be, for adventure, for employment. If I wanted to, I could go and be, you know, I don't know, a shepherd on the Outer Hebrides. There's not, well, I'd need to get a diesel heater then.
Yeah,
definitely,
you definitely
obviously.
Would need a diesel heater for that.
Maybe even a wood burner in there, I don't know. But, you know, the opportunity is there for me to do that. you know, I can go anywhere in the country, technically anywhere in the world, if I could get the van on a ferry, you know, that would take me, and find a job or connect with new people, experience a new environment, new place. And it's just all there waiting for me. And sometimes I think when you are in, you know, living kind of more conventionally, you're a little, in a way, sometimes you can be a little bit more closed off from other people, from connecting with other people. You know, when I lived in a house, I would go to work, I would come home, I'd make my tea, I'd shove something on Netflix or, you know, some reruns of Bake Off, you know, whatever I needed just to settle my mind down and not think. Whereas when you're in a van, you spend a lot of your time living out of the van, you know, outside of the vehicle, and you've got more space, more headspace, not just because of the financial freedom of living in a van, just because of that way of life, that lifestyle. You're more likely to connect with new people and have, you know, conversations with strangers. Just because of the way that you live in. You know, I don't really watch TV in the van. I'll read, or, you know, if I'm staying on a campsite, I'll be out and about saying hello. You go off to the toilet block, you're filling your waters up. Oh, hello, you're nosing round everyone else's van. You just tend to have more, connections, new connections.
I think it does totally change how you look at the world. So my story isn't the same as yours at all, but about 12 years ago, me and my husband were having a very, very difficult time. So we gave everything up. We gave away everything, including our house and our car and most of our stuff.
Wow.
And we had a leaving party and literally nobody left empty-handed. You know, they just kind of took...
I wish I'd have known you then.
Loads of our stuff.
I might have got that sparkly top, My favourite colour.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And to be honest, we've never gone back to it. So I don't know what stuff I own because loads of it is in storage somewhere and I've never actually gone back to find out what's there. And what's really interesting, and our lives that we have now bear no resemblance to the lives that we gave up. Not at all. You know, I used to have proper jobs and, you know, be very senior and write government policy and all that sort of stuff. And now I wander around and chat to people and, you know, and live freelance and rent a little flat and all that kind of thing. Yeah. But, you know, I think it is true that you move yourself out of the kind of normality. And we just had rucksacks on our back for a year and that was all we had. And, you know, you do move yourself out and it does allow you to really think, what do I want from life? Yeah. What matters to me? What's important? What's not? And it really allows you to kind of, I think, as you say, when you are living in the moment, to make much more of those decisions, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, when everyone went through the pandemic, you know, for a lot of people, that was like, you know, unheard of space to really think about, you know, what meant something to them, you know, people that were furloughed, that suddenly didn't have to work 40, 50 hours a week, you know, they had all that time, all that space to reevaluate what gave their life meaning.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, you know, the change that happened, the changes that they made after they'd had that time of reflection was just, you know, immense. People left jobs like you did because they realized, you know, hang on a minute, I'm working 40 hours a week, you know, every week I've got 2 days really to connect with friends and family, to be creative, to thrive, to find out who I am in the world and, you know, what do I want to do, you know, what do I want to bring to the world. And two days, you know, we work full time and the retirement age is just getting further and further away for everybody. And, for me, I want to live in the now. I want to live now. I don't want to wait till, you know, I retire. Because so many people that I've known and just, you know, they've paid off the mortgage. They've worked every hour God sends. You know, they've retired. They've got the big holiday booked. They're ready to go. And then 2 weeks before they go on this holiday, you know, they get a really distressing and horrific diagnosis, you know, or they don't make it to the big holiday for whatever reason. And life is just too short.
It is.
And the way our society currently operates doesn't give us enough time to actually live. Yeah. And that is why I chose to live in a camper van. You know, I chose to move away from that particular status quo because it just didn't work for me. It didn't work for me. It wasn't good for my mental health. It wasn't, I wasn't thriving, you know. And that's why I made that move. And yeah, I don't have running water. Yeah, sometimes I've got to scramble around a graveyard, you know, for to find the water taps and fill it up. But it's so much easier, you know. People, it's so much easier having lived that life, done the 40-hour, you know, working weeks, tried to keep up with the mortgage payments, the utilities, all the bills to make ends meet, and in and around work, see friends and family. Having tried to do all that and it made me ill, I can honestly tell you now that living in a camper van is so much easier. It is so much easier.
And that's something that's so interesting, because probably at the start of this, people wouldn't necessarily have thought about that. Before we go to some questions, though, just let's lighten the mood a bit, because there's some fantastic stories in the book about some of the realities of actually procuring the camper van and getting the right camper van itself. Tell us about the first van that you went off and got.
The
£3,000 Bedford, when you first decided, this is it, I'm going to live in a camper van.
Oh, it was absolutely beautiful, guys. If you could picture a camper van, the camper van of your dreams, this was it. It was a Bedford CF, coach built.
Is there anyone who knows what a Bedford CF is? Hey, you see, there's a few people not in here.
Yeah. Some camper vanners at the front there. You know, it had the bed above the cab. It had the separate bathroom, dining area, living area. It was, if I'm honest, it was huge. And I'd never driven a van before at this point. So my eyes were too big for my belly, really, with this one. Anyway, I saw it on eBay and I thought, I'm going to have that. I'm going to live in that. That is going to be me. That'll be my life. And poor mum over there. Hi, Julie.
Hi, mum.
Who has been through so much with me over the years and is absolutely fabulous. And I love to death. She gets dragged on all my adventures. So I rang her up and said, Mum, I might have accidentally bid on this huge motorhome on eBay and I've won it by accident. please, will you give me a lift to Coventry to pick it up? And of course she did. She took me down to Coventry. And I didn't have a mechanical mind at that point. I think it was in my early 20s. I didn't know how to do an oil change. I never checked the water. Didn't know any of that. So we picked up this van. We handed over the money. And, you know, we were driving home and I was doing really well, even though I was terrified. I was starting to get in the swing of things on the motorway, wound the window down, put the radio on. Oh, yeah, this is the life for me. And then all of a sudden, this is on a motorway bridge somewhere near Coventry. There's black smoke just billowing out of the engine, so thick and so black. I couldn't even see. I couldn't see to drive. And the van's juddering, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I managed to just coax it into the hard shoulder. My life just flashed before my eyes because the hard shoulder was on the motorway bridge and there was a drop of about 200 foot. And I thought, well, you know, I guess we'll find out whether Bedford vans can fly or not, Peg. Anyway, I didn't go over the edge, so I'm still here today to tell the tale. Well, unfortunately, because I was very inexperienced, and the person that sold me the van must have been also very inexperienced. Yeah. We didn't check the water. So it just boiled dry. And
But you and your mum checked the water. You went back because your mum was with you and your mum's in her car.
She was.
So you go back to Coventry, don't you?
Yeah, we went
and
back.
And you pull out all the stops and assertiveness, don't you?
Mum was on the phone. Right, we're going to bring this back. We want our money back. But he wasn't having it. I think, did he refunded us, gave us some money back to fix the melted engine. But obviously, a new engine is a bit more than, was it 300 quid in a Bedford?
Yeah, but you did. You do end up getting it fixed because you know a lot of men what do, don't you? Men called Dave or
various, they're all called Dave.
They're all called Dave. And a lot of happenstance. The right person happens to come into your life at exactly the right time who can fix your van, and he does actually fix it for you.
It does.
So we've got a microphone. Yeah, Tom at the back's there has got us a microphone. So, and we've got another one on this side. So come on, let's have some thoughts, some questions. So at the back there, and then there's someone else as well. Put the hand up earlier at the back.
Hiya. It could be a comment. It could be a question. When I come across the title of your book, The Happy Nomad, the contrast, because often people think if you are displaced, if you are not centralized, you're unhappy. But as someone who lived away from home, well, that's subject to discussion. What do you mean by home? I found home within me. And sometimes you move on from the concept of home, where you belong, to feeling of home, being at home. And I think the experience that you share with us, I really connected with that, because if you're away from a place that you're familiar with and have connection with people, you come to realize that you can be part of everywhere at the same time, nowhere.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. I did enjoy your talk, and I think we live in a time where we are kind of part of a system, and we are encouraged to be part of that system. It's very hard to come out of that cycle.
It is.
And it's really hard to find your own center. Thank you so much for sharing your experience. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your words. Yeah. Thank you so much.
They were beautiful, weren't they?
Thank you. And in fact,
you said, I'm trying to think how you described it there, but you also say in the book, home is not a place, it's a feeling within, which is, I think, what you were just saying there. And it is very true, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it wasn't me that said it. It was a really good friend that told me once when my anxiety was, I was finding it very difficult to deal with. I was feeling very lost, and it was a very good friend of mine who said, Charlotte, wherever you are home, because home isn't a place, it is a feeling, and you carry that wherever you go, and you can just tap into that feeling, that sense of home, because we just all carry our homes with us.
And that must be lovely to hear. What's your name?
I'm Samara, I write poetry, and my area is displacement and the impact of place on language.
Yes.
So I don't think you necessarily need to learn this stuff in academic texts if you have a personal experience. That's why we share the same view on that, because I think we have a similar experience. It doesn't have to be necessary between continents.
Yeah.
You could live in a city and you still feel displaced.
Yes.
Maybe that's why the experience of home push you to kind of break the boundaries and not wanting necessarily to live in a home. Maybe nature is your home.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's how I feel it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You definitely need to talk afterwards.
Blood related?
Yes.
That's fascinating. I love that idea. Thank you for bringing that up there about displacement and happiness with displacement and the title. And that must be very satisfying for you, Charlotte. Was it Samira you said? Saying that she loved that title of it because it instantly connected with her.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing those beautiful words. Yeah.
Brilliant. Who else would like to join in the chat?
Most people have to live in a home to earn money, don't they?
Yes.
So how do you survive financially? You need a certain amount of money, don't you, to even be on the road?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's jobs wherever you go in this country or across the world, there's always, people just need staff. So there's always employment. So usually when I'm traveling around, I might stay somewhere for a month or two and I'll always get work because I don't mind what kind of work I do. I've done everything you could possibly imagine, including being a mortgage consultant, which is kind of ironic. You stay in maybe one area for a month or two, you build up some money, you might have another month or two off, go off adventuring, meet some people, see some places. And, you know, that's kind of how I do it, really. Unless you really fall in love with the place. And I did stay in Cornwall for 2 or 3 years.
You're not living in Cornwall now, then?
No, I'm living in Keighley at the moment.
All right, okay.
I'm actually waiting for a hernia operation. So I do kind of have to be in one place to get that done. And then as soon as I'm fixed, I'll be, back on the road. And I'm thinking maybe Scotland is next on the destination.
You are going to need a heater, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Need a heater. Yeah. Need one now, Peg. Need one now.
Well, hopefully you're going to make loads of money from the book as well.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, it would be lovely, of course, to make enough money to buy a really good heater. But, I mean, for me, writing this book, sharing my life with everyone, it's, you know, people say it's brave, but for me, it's braver not to share it. It's braver to carry it all and keep it all inside. You know, that's brave. This distributes the weight of everything I've been through to everyone that reads it, and that kind of makes it lighter for me. And that's why I think everyone, no matter what you are going through or have been through, the most important thing is to share it, is to talk about it, so you're not carrying all that weight. You know, you can share it with friends, with family, and it just eases and it eases. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I felt compelled to write the book and share my story. Also, to help anyone else who has been through what I've been through, who can relate to, what I've been through, or, you know, anyone that finds inspiration from my story is a really wonderful thing.
And that's it's a wonderful thing to, as you say, to be able to share it and hope.
It's a real privilege,
that good comes of it. Who else would like to join in the chat? We must have some more questions. Yeah, wouldn't be the mic down here?
Hi.
Wait, let's use the mic, if that's okay, then everyone can hear. Thanks.
Yeah, I love the idea of going back to living a more free life. I used to live on a narrowboat at one time on the Rochdale Canal, near Todmorden, between Todmorden and Hebden Bridge, Callis Mill. But it was kind of partly for a reason that was very sort of pragmatic, in that I'd had to give up my job in order to enable me to care for my mum, who had Alzheimer's and was still down south in Birmingham. She was, I'm originally from Bradford, and some of my parents, but we kind of went down there to live down there. Anyway, I was working in mental health. I had to give it up, really, to care for her. But, yeah, it was wonderful living on this narrow boat, and I felt like at one with nature and living, like you were saying, Charlotte, you know, living for the moment.
Yeah.
And because you're using your body a lot, physically, just, you know, gathering wood, dry wood up and things to put on your fire, and water.
Yeah, filling your water.
Filling water.
That's probably why I've got a hernia.
Yeah, you're going to say, I was asking you how you got your hernia. I would imagine it's, and sciatica, that's another thing, is it?
Oh.
But
you are just more connected, aren't you?
You are.
Yeah.
What happened to me was my mother died, and I'd been very close to her because I was kind of spending more and more time down there with her, and then coming back and, you know, living on the boat when I came back. And it was a lovely kind of refuge for me when I came back up, you know, because it was pretty full on when I was down there. But all of a sudden it felt like I got that feeling of displacement, even though I was back on the boat. And now I'm thinking about maybe a life on a camper van would bring back that. And I'd actually be using it to travel around, whereas when I was on the boat, I only went a couple of times as far as the pub at Stubbings, you know. Got a few pints, rang my mum. It was the days when they still had landline, just about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Have you been inspired by a camper van? I have, actually. It's just a narrow boat with wheels, kind of, but not as big. Exactly. Toilet-wise, I would need, because I've got IBS.
I've got IBS.
Have you got IBS? Yeah. Is that a common trait, do you think, of nomadic people?
I don't know.
You've got to keep going round to get from one place to another to get
you. Hands up, who's got IBS? Look, see?
Oh, look, there's quite a few.
Don't be shy, people. Own it.
Oh, my God, it's... You know, did you have a compost toilet or...
Yeah, you're getting onto loo.
Composting loo,
it's called a boxio.
Come on, describe, tell us all about it, because we all want to know.
Do we want to talk about this?
Yeah, we need to get down to the nitty-gritty of toilet. It always gets down to the loo with boaters
And vanners.
And vanners, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, tell us about this loo then.
Well, I've got... So it's a boxio toilet. It obviously separates the things. And then, so you've got a little compartment at the back and you put your composting bag in there. And then obviously you've got your tinkle at the front. And then I use sawdust. So I'll do my thing, bit of sawdust, people. And then I'll tie the bag up and then I will just drop it in either a council waste bin. I usually go for the specified dog waste bins. Yeah. Compostable bag, yeah. So there's no harm to the environment. It composts down, even though it will go into landfill, like everything else does go into landfill. But I'm assured that I won't be contributing to, non-compostable landfill.
You do talk quite a lot in the book about all the measures you've taken to have a sustainable and non-impactful life as possible, haven't you? I mean, your carbon contribution must be fairly small.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose it's fairly small in relation to, a cattle farm, shall we say. But, everything. You are more aware of your resources. Mm. You know, obviously, I do travel around. It is a diesel van. If someone wants to give me a fully electric van, please... come along and I will gladly use that, because that would be, that is the future, isn't it? That's the way forward, and there are electric vans coming out, and that is what I would, kind of love to have. I've got to sell a few more copies of the book for that to happen, I think.
Oh, well, there you go. If that's not a good pointer to make people want to buy the book, I don't know what it is. Let's ask anybody else want to join in the conversation. Any thoughts, any questions, observations? Yeah? We'll pass the mic down because it's really hard for everyone else to hear, if that's okay.
Just the bit where you broke down on the motorway just made me cringe so much from having... own many dodgy cars in my time. How competent a mechanic are you now then? How did you learn?
Oh, I can do an oil change. I can change the wheel. I can check the water. I can probably do a fuel filter change, oil filter change, air filter change. That is your lot. For everything else, it's Diesel Dave's in Keighley. Another Dave.
Another Dave.
Another Dave. Or the AA. Oh, no, I can't do the fan belt. Well, I mean, anyone can do anything as long as you've got YouTube. My mum, lovely Julie over there, she did her brake discs and pads with the laptop out there with the YouTube on. I mean, that's probably where I get it from my mum. Just have a go. What's the worst that can happen? Your brakes will fail. That's quite bad. Maybe don't have a go, but...
We've got another question there, but just on this subject, a slightly different variation of the subject though. But what about safety and feeling scared as a lone woman in the van?
I always find like the further out of a town I park, the more scared I feel, because the only thing that's going to hear me scream out there is maybe a couple of squirrels passing hedgehog. So I do like to be kind of in a more built-up area because I feel safer. So I feel safer being around people. Although I do park, I go off, into remote areas, especially when I'm, if I'm hiking or I'm in the Lake District or if I've gone up Scotland, things like that. But generally, I like to be around a town just so if anything does happen, something or someone more useful than a hedgehog will hear me scream. But you do have to be mindful of that. It is a thing. I am a lone woman, you know. I have got a really big claw hammer. So, you know, that might come in at some point. I'm not sure.
Fingers crossed you won't.
Fingers crossed I won't have to use it apart from nails.
You were talking about, you touched on mental health and also that your centre is your home. But I also was curious about the times when you need a support network more or to feel grounded, how you manage that and kind of how you check in or where, you know, if you have groups of people that you go to kind of be able to relax around and not always be the new person in a new area kind of thing, how you manage that?
I'm kind of pretty relaxed around most people, but I suppose to truly relax, I like my own company and a good book. I suppose with regards to support, I mean, in this day and age, support is only a WhatsApp message away or a phone call, although no one ever rings each other anymore. But, you know, I do. I still ring people. So, I mean, all of my support is, wherever I am in the country, is just at the other end of a phone. And, I definitely do have moments of loneliness. Absolutely. I'm a human being. You know, we all get lonely. You know, we can get lonely when we're surrounded by people, even people that we are extremely comfortable with. It's all about what's going on in here. I still have moments of loneliness, but I have got an amazing, you know, family, amazing friends. And I do, you know, because I don't have all the stress and pressure that conventional living can sometimes put on you, I do have just more space in my life and in my mind to connect with new people. So I make new friends really easily and I am kind of comfortable with them in a really short space of time. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but I wear my heart on my sleeve anyway. So I'm always just me, fairly comfortable. And
you do get a sense in the book that the van lifer community is a real community.
Oh yeah, it's great. Everyone looks after each other. Everyone is just so kind. I mean, most people are really kind anyway. You know, all human beings, if you have a one-to-one conversation with anyone from any walk of life, they are 9.9 times out of 10 beautiful human beings, beautiful people, kind, generous, compassionate, lovely humans. And that's what I find. And the energy you put out into the world and the space around you is often the energy that you will receive. So if you're friendly and you're open and, you know, you're present and you listen to whoever is speaking to you and sharing their story with you, they're going to treat you the same. They'll be kind to you and they will listen to you. And it just, that's how it works. I really find that's how it works. What you put out, you get back.
Wow, fantastic. I mean, we are coming up to the hour.
Oh,
I think that is a really fantastic place to end, actually, because it's a really positive note. And in the book, you have a little, I don't know, what do you call it? And then, not an end note, but there's a
resources.
Kind of, there's a section at the end, isn't there, where you talk a bit about, kind of just about the process of writing the book and all of that. And you say in there that you hope people who read it are left with a feeling of hope and with a sense of increased possibility.
Yes.
And that your story can help give that to people. And I think absolutely tonight, we've certainly felt that, haven't we? We've heard that, absolutely.
I hope I haven't bored you to tears, decisions. Everybody.
No, there are different decisions that we can make, and the decisions that's right for each of us is probably different for different people, but we don't necessarily just have to live one way.
No.
I think that's such a great message, and we can get over things as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anything, I mean, this, you know, was written because of the trauma that I experienced. So I've transformed my trauma into something creative, into essentially a piece of art. And that's how I've, you know, reframed my trauma, repurposed that energy, you know. And that's not to say I still, you know, I still get anxious. Of course I do. I'm a human being. I still get angry. I still sometimes, you know, go back into, you know, those moments where I relive that trauma, experience that trauma. But yeah, it's just, yeah, just reuse that energy, refocus that energy and do something beautiful with it.
There we go. Do something beautiful with it. I think we're going to need to finish now, but keep the chat going with Charlotte. Everybody, Charlotte Bradman.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Explore Words, Discover Worlds podcast, presented by Bradford Literature Festival. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe, share this episode with others and leave a rating. Mark your calendars for the return of Bradford Literature Festival on Friday the 27th of June to Sunday the 6th of July 2025.